Well, if you've been with us through this series, you'll remember a couple of weeks back we spoke about why drag God into the workplace. And I guess this lunchtime we're looking really about why drag ourselves into the workplace. The paragraph I've been given to speak on is really a little paragraph that speaks to a Christian community, speaks about how they should seek to live their lives, and it wants to encourage them in ways that will affect every bit of their life, including the workplace. It begins with a couple of strange verses when you look at them, which really seems to suggest that, you know, when wanting more is a good thing. Look at verse 9. Now, about your love for one another, we don't need to write to you, for you yourselves have been taught by God to love each other, and in fact you do love all of God's family throughout Macedonia. Yet we urge you, brothers and sisters, to do so more and more. Love is in the air, they say. Well, lack of love is certainly in the air at the moment. I was shown a newspaper today and saw the number of pages you had to get through to escape Brad and Angelina and Jennifer being dragged into it as well, and get through there. Here the apostle writes about love and you discover a kind of godly discontentment. You thought if you were Christian, you were meant to be contented. Well, so we are at all kinds of places, but there are some where to be discontented is a healthy thing. And this is one of them. He's spoken earlier in the chapter about a love that is lust, and now he's speaking about a love that is selfless. He's moved from a love that wants to get to a love that gives, and he says there's no need to write to you about loving one another. You're great at it. But he says, all the same at the end of verse 10, we urge you, brothers and sisters, to do so more and more. And he's not going all soppy and treacly when it comes to love. He's actually being very practical. He's wanting them to have the right ambitions. Here's something to be ambitious over. That your love grows and grows. He knows how quickly it evaporates. Well, Brad and Angelina had only been married for a couple of years. He knows how quickly it becomes selective. And this isn't to be a selective love. It's a love for one another. You love all of God's family throughout Macedonia. You know, we can all handle selective love, can't we? It's bringing this kind of love into the office that makes a difference. When wanting more is a good thing. When, as you read on, when dull has its virtues, and that's verses 11 and 12 really, you know, I don't know what gets you out of bed in the morning, but I doubt it's the idea of a quiet life. And that normally leaves people in bed, doesn't it? And I know people say I'd do anything for a quiet life, but they very rarely mean it. Make it your ambition, he says, to lead a quiet life. Make it your ambition to have no ambition, that sounds like to us, but it's not quite what he means. Well, when he says quiet life, do not think of the quiet coach on the train, where you're not meant to use your mobiles and only whisper. It's not the sort of quiet life that's, you know, your slippers on, the mug of Ovaltine at 9 o'clock at night, and then it's up to bed. It's none of that in it. It's got this sense of not being the sort of being the sort of person who will avoid unnecessary controversy. You're not the stirrer. He speaks later in this chapter. We'll see it and repeats it again about people who are idle and disruptive. He'll write to other Christians and he'll say, if it's possible, insofar as it lies with you, live at peace with all. It's wonderfully realistic as well, because, see, he knows it does take two to make peace, doesn't it? So you may not be able to pull it off, but insofar as it lies with you, you're willing to bury the hatchet, you're willing to say sorry, you're willing to extend the arm of friendship, live at peace with all. He's meaning that it's a kind of inner peace in this quiet life that You know those sort of people where everything has to be a competition so that they can win? They're always having to prove themselves. Well, Paul's writing to people and he's saying, look, you don't have to. You've got a value, you've got an identity, you've got a worth, and it's not as transient as the latest sales figures. Those disciples have found it to Christ, and he's encouraging them to bring it to work. Make it your ambition to live a quiet life. You should, here's something else that won't get you out of bed in the morning, mind your own business. It's a bit odd, this thing, isn't it? Because see, he begins by saying, love one another more and more, and you can't love someone without involving yourself in their business, can you? And then the next moment he's saying, mind your own business. Which do you mean? Well, there is a line, isn't there, between love and meddling. I mean, look across the page to chapter 5 and verse 14. And we urge you, brothers and sisters, he says, warn those who are idle and disruptive, encourage the disheartened, help the weak, be patient with everyone. You notice the different things? Warn, encourage, help, be patient. But notice the ones you ought to warn are the idle and disruptive. And if you turn over another page, you'll see when he writes a second letter to the Thessalonians and you get to chapter 3 and verse 11, we hear that some among you are idle and disruptive. They are not busy, they're busybodies. You know, they've got too much time on their hand. Such people we command and urge in the Lord Jesus Christ to settle down and earn the food they eat. Idle and disruptive, not busy, but busybodies. Oh, who hasn't met one of those? You know, so busy living someone else's life, they don't get on with their own. You see it sometimes in families, don't you? Parents just too busy living the children's life for them. Get on with being mum. The siblings who can't get out of each other's shoes. They come to work in the office, sticking their nose in someone else's business. Not only do they have to have an opinion on everything, but they have to share it. And he's warned them. It happens in Christian discipleship as well. Do you remember the risen Jesus up at the Lake of Galilee when the disciples had all gone fishing for the night? They'd caught nothing, and they see Jesus by the lakeside, and there's a fire there, and he makes them a fish breakfast, and he goes for a walk with Peter afterwards, and they have a sort of one-on-one conversation. And you remember Jesus says, you know, do you love me, Peter? And he says, yes, of course, well, feed my sheep. Do you love me? Well, yes, feed my sheep. Do you love me? Three times he asks the question to match the three denials Peter had given by another far side. And then at the end, he says to Peter, listen, this is how it's going to turn out for you. Here's how the end's going to come for you. Here's how you'll die. Stretched out, not master of your own fate. Follow me, he says. And as they're walking along, Peter is sort of half absorbing it, but he sees his friend John just up ahead, and he's just been told what his future is. He says, what about him, Jesus? And Jesus says, what's that to you? Follow me. Of course, it started a rumor that John wasn't going to die at all, but Jesus didn't say that. He hadn't said that. Peter said, what about him? And Jesus said, mind your own business, Peter. Your business is follow me. What does it matter what's going to happen to someone else? Yeah, sometimes we're so full of everyone else's, we miss what we're called to do. Or again, he says, work with your hands. I don't think this is saying you can't be a white-collar worker, but it certainly rejects the sniffiness that some have for some jobs. Greek culture looked down on manual labor, despised those kind of workers. I don't know how you think of the Apostle Paul. Some certainly think of him as a sort of cerebral intellectual, but it's interesting, he was a tent maker. Hot, sweaty, smelly, work with leather, despised job. Jesus was a carpenter of all things. Yeah. Don't put on airs and graces, the apostle writes. Do the job if you can get it. See, he's writing to people not who are suffering from a scarcity of work, but an unwillingness to work. Not who can't find work, but who won't find a job. And he says, work with your hands. Work rather than loaf around. The Bible warns of the loafer around. The Proverbs, full of wisdom for the workplace, speaks often about the sluggard. It's got some fascinating things to say. Here's a famous verse or two. Go to the ant, you sluggard, consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, yet it stores its provisions in summer, gathers its food at harvest. How long will you lie there, you sluggard? When will you get up from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a thief and scarcity like an armed man. A little, you know, I'm just gonna catch a brief nap. A little folding of the hands. You get off the pace very quickly, don't you? You get used to being off the pace very quickly too. Or here it is again. A sluggard says, there's a lion in the road, a fierce lion roaming the streets. I think this is the kind of equivalent of the school kid who comes to school and says, the dog ate my homework. Here's why you were late for work in the morning. You know, almost any rumor you'll believe if it means you can just slow down. As a door turns on its hinges, so a sluggard turns on its bed. My teenage son loved it when I quoted that at him in the morning. You know, a sluggard buries his hand in the dish and he's too lazy to bring it back to his mouth. I mean, the sort of ultimate laziness. You've kind of got there and, oh, he's gone. Now work with your hands rather than loaf around. However demeaning the job is, and lastly, win respect, so that, verse 12, your daily life may win the respect of outsiders. I mean, the New Testament always has an eye on the outsider. It was a day when the church is far smaller than it is today. A day when the culture was far more hostile than it is today. And it's where we live our lives and live our working lives in front of a watching world. And what does the watching world see? Christians with heads so much in the clouds they can't engage with real life? Well, clearly there's a worry here about some who are branded as idle for one reason or another. Many think some of them were so carried away by thoughts of Christ coming again and of the kingdom he'd bring with him, so carried away they didn't bother with or care about life in the here and now. And of course, we like to mock those kind of people, don't we? We talk about people being so heavenly minded they're no earthly use. But you wonder what kind of heavenly minded that is. The Earl of Shaftesbury, the seventh Earl of Shaftesbury, one of the great social reformers, used to say that hardly 2 hours went by without him thinking of the Lord's coming. But no one would accuse him of being of no earthly use. Amongst the organizations that he was instrumental in establishing are Shaftesbury Society, Shaftesbury Homes, Church Pastoral Aid Society, Bible Society, John Groom's Association for the Disabled, the London City Mission, the YMCA, the YWCA. He was in Parliament and he passed acts. Among them were lunacy acts, providing compassionate state care for the insane, the 10-hour bill, restricting children's working day to 10 hours, chimney sweeps bill, prohibiting the use of climbing boys, colliery bill, outlawing the use of women and children underground in the mines, the Education Act of 1870, paving the way for obligatory state education. That's not bad, is it, for being no earthly use? He earned respect. Hundreds and thousands lined the way for his funeral when it came. In fact, there's still a statue to him in Piccadilly Circus. That's his statue, so to speak. Yeah, when dull, has its virtues. Or then again, there's what I said, when the worst of all good reasons is still worth it. Here's really how he rounds off. You see, work-wise, I suspect we're a privileged group. For the vast majority of us, work is available if we want it. Such is our background, most of us will have had options for work. We'll have made job choices. And at least on the best of days, we can think of more than one reason for going to work. You know, it's stimulating. Many of us have stimulating jobs. Not all of us, but many of us do. It pays well. There'll be some here who can certainly say that. There's a feeling that what we do makes a difference for people. It's a great motivator, isn't it? It uses my gifts. Well, when you can't tick any of those boxes, here's one more, at least, that's left on the list. It means I'll not be dependent on anybody. See, Paul longs for the watching world looking on to see a group who are not shirkers or scroungers. Benefit scroungers easily get exaggerated and easily get demonized. But there is an understandable upset when people who could work but won't live off handouts paid for by hard-working others. Not talking about those on the dole and can't find work, but those who won't. And of course, a community like the one he's describing here that's loving each other more and more would include support for those in real need. But the New Testament is very wise. It knows there's a false independence in life that some people live. And those lines about loving one another are there to correct that. But sometimes there's an unnecessary dependence in life. And the apostle's warning against that here. Then the New Testament knows a sponger when it sees one. And so does the watching world. And Christians aren't to hide behind sophisticated qualifications or a sense of I'm too important for that, it's not me, and avoid work with your hands or its equivalent. Maybe the worst of all good reasons. But take the job, says the apostle, so you won't be dependent on anybody. Love will mean I will support others in the family in need. And I suspect for those of us who are Westerners, other cultures rebuke us in the way they look after their families and their extended families. The money that migrant workers from abroad send back to their home country is a major revenue source in a number of developing countries. Much of it going back to extended families. I was reading the other day that the 30 million African diaspora, that is to say Africans who've left the continent and are largely working in first world countries, the 30 million African diaspora sends home each year $140 billion. Much of it in support of extended families. Yeah, love means I will support others in the family in need. Love also, Paul's reminding me, means that we'll support ourselves so we don't need supporting by others. It is a good reason to get out of bed in the morning. And the New Testament says it more than once. Turn over to 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 10. Even when we were with you, we gave you this rule, the one who is unwilling to work shall not eat. Turn over again to 1 Timothy, that's the next book, chapter 5 and verse 8. Anyone who does not provide for their relatives and especially for their own household has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Here, work with your hands so that your daily life may win the respect of outsiders and that you won't be dependent on anybody. So how do we sum up? Well, I put it, when unexciting is a dream. And many of these are things that you kind of nod at. Do you need to say it? They're fairly obvious, aren't they? A growing love, a quiet life, you know, not endlessly proving yourself, showing others up, putting others down, mind your own business, someone who gets on with the job they've been given and not telling everyone else how to do theirs, work with your own hands, someone happy to do the menial jobs no one else enjoys, a respect of outsiders, they're well thought of by others, not dependent on anybody, not the kind of person who indulges himself and then gets others to pay the bill, goes through life serving, not scrounging. Actually, you can pick them up one by one, can't you? And you can write each of them off as dull and unexciting. Put them all together, and you've something near a dream colleague. Sort of person to good to have around the office. What's the secret? Well, what produces that kind of worker? We'll have to come to the guest lunch to find that out. Thanks.